Station number 23218, Rule 3.
Colonel Goodmanset, Rule 3. I think you were saying that you were part of Scottish Command and so simply moved around by them.
Yep.
What sort of training facilities did you have in these places, the places like Nigg and Fraserburgh?
Nigg, is it on?
Yes.
Yeah. Nigg, of course, was a military camp that had been set up with Nissen hats and so on, you know, a normal type we had over there.
Yeah.
But when we lived in Fraserburgh, we were billeted in the town hall and in different places around the town. But the reason why we went to Fraserburgh, I figured out, was that at that time we started to do sort of scaffolding, you know, building ridges on all possible beaches for beach landing of enemies from the sea.
So you're putting up obstacles.
Yeah. And then we moved up to Nigg, and then in Nigg, of course, we had all the training facility. So that had been requisitioned for that camp. The camp was for one battalion. So there was enough places, and there was enough. We had firing ranges up in Nigg.
What about a tactical training area? Did you have access to?
Yeah, of course, we had all this area between Nigg and the sea. Of course, that area was used for we could use it for tactical area, or even using artillery there. So we had a lot of exercises up, and of course we had a lot of marches and physical training in that area.
Were the people in the battalion generally physically fit?
Of course they became that after being there a while, because they were doing hard training every day of the week. And when we were stationed up in Nigg, the Norwegian battalion, what was all there, was reorganized.
How was it reorganized?
That instead of four companies and a battalion headquarters, we were reorganized into four mountain companies. Number one to four, mountain company, which was a self-sustained unit. Hmm. And the thought behind it, I think, was fighting in Norway. And they also had, of course, the mountain companies was actually a mini battalion, because they have even a sort of a transport unit, which after a while were with horses, mule horses, and they had only that was established from the 1st of June 1942. At that time, discussions was going on between War Office and the Allied forces, different Allied forces in England.
You say a mountain company was like a battalion because it was self-contained.
Self-contained, yes.
And you said you had a transport company which would have horses or mules.
Transport platoon in so each.
A transport platoon in each company.
Yeah.
How many men would there be? How many fighting men would there be in a
around 200.
Company? That's bigger than an ordinary.
Yeah, big. Because they had all this extra sort of transport and sanitary and all those sort of things that made it around about 200. Yeah.
Did it have the same weapons as a standard infantry company? Or
yeah.
It did.
Yeah.
So by this stage, you would have had the 3-inch mortar.
Yes.
What did you think of the 3-inch mortar?
Yes, that is. I think it's. Compared to the mortar we had in Norway before the war, I think the 3-inch mortar is a good weapon, which the 2-inch mortar, of course, isn't. That is only there for one thing, smoke laying. That's what you can use it for. But you know, they had just got into those organization number one to four independent companies, and then War Office. And that, of course, was in the raiding period, where organizing raids on the Norwegian coast, French coast, Belgian coast, and so on. And then War Office then came with a decision that all Allied forces, all Allied troops in England, should then organize a commando unit, because when the British leading organized a raid to A or B or C, they should be able to bring with them people from that country in that area. And the Norwegian army headquarters, as always when British War Office asked for people who was going to go into action, they resented.
That time, I think the Linger Company was also...
Oh, that was something special,
yes,
actually.
It was operating, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was operating on an agent basis.
Yes.
It was just organized that, of course. In the same organization as England had or Britain had before, that they had independent companies doing that sort of work.
Yes.
I can tell you, number one independent company did special works in 1940 in North Norway, in Bodø area. But eventually then an order came that we should organize a Norwegian commando troop, also a commando troop is a company.
Yes.
And to be able to do that, the Norwegian forces had to disband one of those mountain companies. And they said, okay, number four mountain companies is going to be the basis of those going into the commandos. But in commandos, you have to be, you have to sign on, you know, they can't order you to go into commandos. You have to be
a volunteer.
Volunteer, yeah. And the basic was the number four mountain company, and we started organizing that in July 42.
How many of the company volunteered?
I'll say out of the company was about 130, I think, of the 200, I think, at least, yeah, because you know that. Some who would volunteer was because they were whalers and so on. They were in age group that we couldn't use for commando.
They're too old.
They're too old, yeah. Mm.
What was the age range then in the independent companies? How old were the oldest men?
Yeah, they were up to, some of them were over 40. Oh. Because they've been out whaling since 1939. Mm. Not been making, being whalers for all their lives.
How did they perform when you were doing your mountain warfare training? Were they able to keep up and keep going?
Yeah, of course. Some of them had to, after a short while, and we could see that they couldn't hang on with the basic type of training. They were sent over to the other groups, to the Navy or the Merchant Navy and so on. And also, of course, they could get a lot of sort of administrative jobs in the workshops and God knows what. Mm. But then...
But you were still a young lad, weren't you, at that time?
I was 20 at that time.
About 20 years.
So I was then selected as one of the commando troop, Norwegian commanders, who was going to consist of company commander, administrative officer, and four troops officers, two officers in each platoon. And we were selected and started our special training already at the end of June 42, in sort of the special courses, some battle courses. We started in Fort William, went over to Achnacarry and all the commando facilities. So by the 1st of October 42, number 5 troop, 10 IA commando, Inter-Allied commando, was reporting to the British headquarters as a ready commando unit.
What did the special commando training consist of? What were the main emphases in that?
First of all, also a commando. He should be able to. He should be the best soldier in the world. That's the main thing. He goes through the super hard training, I can tell you that when we get to the Kamanu Hardening School at Achnacarry in Scotland, we arrive in the Spinebridge station. There is a couple of, there's a couple of 10, 20 British commando sergeants taking hold of you, and with all you have with you, you run to from the Spinebridge station to Achnacarry. That is 12 miles. No stop.
That's just the beginning.
The beginning. Mm. And when you get into the training camp in Achnacarry, as long as you are outside your Nissen hut, even whatever you do, as long as you're out the door, you have to run. Even if you stay still and talk to another people, other commando, you have to both have to stay there running at the place.
Running on the spot.
On the spot, all the time. And all the training, all the field training you do, is with sharp ammunition. And of course, that we had three casualties in the training in Achnacarry. And then, of course, on when you are a Finnish commando, you are a qualified commando unit, you have to follow a typical sort of physical fit program that each Saturday you have to stop the day with a 7 miles speed march. But you have to be with complete unit, your complete platoon has to do this in 50 minutes, 7 miles. And the time is not when the first come to the field, but you have to come in at a close unit, and it's the last man who comes. And we do also, and then it's in your education, it's all special types of education. You have the parachute training, you have rock, you do sort of climbing training, and you do lots and lots of sea landings, shock, assault landings into a boat. So when you are a Finnish commando unit, I have been saying that about our own unit, especially when we got the task to capture Valkeren, that we thought we were the best soldiers in the world. And I said, we were also the best soldiers in the world at that time. So we went into number 10 commando, and that was the strangest unit in the world, Second World War. Headquarters was British, and the chief was Colonel Lister. He was an old British professional boxer. And number one troop was French. Number two troop was Belgian. Number three troop was called X troop, consisted of non-allied person who had signed and was willing to fight against the Germans. And they also operated with false papers.
What sort of places did they come from then?
Germany, Germans. Hungary, mm-hmm. Czechoslovakia, two Swiss, mm-hmm. And all over the place. The second in command of X troop, he became chief of BBC after the war. And number four troop was Belgian. Number five troop was Norwegian. Number six troop was Polish. And number seven troop was Yugoslavish. So you can say it was the strangest unit in the war.
Sounds as though it was a very large unit as well.
Of course, yes, of course. And of course, there's to say then, the French, of course, they were divided and providing people for the raids who took place in France from 42 until the invasion. And the Belgians, they fought then, of course, in Delvis, partly in Belgium, but they were also out a small trip in the Far East. And the ex-troop were never used for special work in Germany inside. And they were a very important part in the taking over of the civilian run of the Germany after the war, because they were most of them especially educated people. And number two troop was the Belgium, of course. The Netherlands, they went to the Far East, to yes. Indonesia. The Belgians took part in Italy and also on the continent. There was not many raids in Belgium. Singapore.
Belgian coast is rather short.
Yeah, of course, yes. Then the Norwegian troops, they, number five troop, they of course did raid from the whole winter of 42-43 and the whole winter of 44-45. They were stationed in Shetland Islands and operated along the Norwegian coast with the Norwegian MTB flotilla.
Now, when this commando training was going on, were you still a sergeant in the...
No, no, I was a second lieutenant.
You, how did you become a second lieutenant? What was the process?
You're typical Norwegian. After you finished the military school in Norway, then you become a sergeant. And then you do your first, as a sergeant, in the first recruit period of, 14, at that time, 90 days in the normal Norwegian army. And when you are done two of those 90 days, you are eligible to become a second lieutenant. And that followed the road. And then after you've done so many trainings as a second lieutenant, you become a lieutenant. That is the way. And they followed that also during the war in Scotland.
So you automatically became a second,
second lieutenant. As long as I belonged to the Norwegian army. Mm. And then, of course, when I joined the commando and took over there, I became a lieutenant and lately a captain. Then I was a captain.
So, are you saying that in the commando it was the British system that was being applied rather than the Norwegian?
Yes.
Okay. So, you went through the commando training. How long was it before you were fully operational? What was the length of time to convert from mountain?
We reported as a commando unit ready for action 1st of October 1942.
When did you make this move up to the Shetlands?
And then, of course, when we were reported, then we went down to commando unit. The whole of number 10 commando was assembled in North Wales.
Ah. What were they doing there?
We were then doing normal commando further training. We were then doing lots of exercises against each other. And normally it was normally the Norwegian against the French. And of course the French were that high, and our types were twice as much. So we had a lot of internal fights. But we trained for the whole of autumn 42, where all the number 10 commando all more or less assembled in North Wales.
When you were doing that training in Wales, what sort of operations were you practicing? Raiding operations?
Commando, that was close fighting, close inside fighting, commando operations. Mm. We did also a lot of landing and operating with small dories and motorboats and so on.
But when you say close fighting, do you mean fighting in built-up areas or...?
Also that, but we also did a lot of close combat, hand-to-hand, jiu-jitsu, what we call it that time.
Unarmed combat.
Unarmed combat, yeah. Mm. Yes. So, and then of course we had to go do the same thing as other sort of airplane recognition and things like that we did.
How did the tactics you were taught in the commandos differ from the tactics you'd learned in the Norwegian army?
We operated on complete different types of systems. In the commando, you operate with independent groups. You get that you have to raid or capture a task, and then you figure out how many groups you need to do that, and then you attack with responsibility to each of the groups to do a different type. And the speciality with commando or commando attack is the speed. The commando it comes like a storm. And the preparation for them is that everybody knows where it's going to be during that storm period till they take the subject, or the object. And that is why the big operation to capture the Walcheren Island was that the tactics or the strategy chosen to capture the island was that they were going to break the dikes around the island before the attack came in. That came on before to that the whole of island was full of water.
Flooded.
Flooded. Mm-hmm. So it was actually, you can take a soup dish. The only thing was the round. So even there were one infantry division and one SS battalion, or plus 22 different batteries on the island of Walcheren. They couldn't use the big forces from the Canadian Army or the 21st Army Group, because there was no possibility to deploy lots of people. Therefore, they had only this little group, this little stretch around the island to go. And that is why it was a command operation all the way around there. And that was the only real clean commando attack during the big commando attack, as a big scale attack during the invasion or fight in the Normandy or on the continent.
Well, there were some quite a lot of commandos operating on D-Day, attacking at Wistrom.
They had special tasks.
They had special tasks, yes.
All the time.
They weren't ordinary attacks.
No. The ordinary attack was the big mass of regiments coming marching on, but they had for Horan had to capture this and this in this area, because the river over the bridge over the Orne, for instance, and so on. That was number 4 commander, with Lord Lovett.
Yes. And there was also Kiefer's commander.
Yeah. Kiefer, Kiefer, do you know who he was? He was in charge of the French troop number 10 commander. Mm. Yeah. Kiefer, yeah.
And he was from Alsace, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Did you know him?
Yes, of course,
What sort of man was he?
he was, you know, he was actually, he wasn't an army soldier, he was a sailor. He belongs to the Navy, you know. Yes.
Well, the commandos weren't fussy, were they, about where you came from?
No.
You could do the training, that was
what mattered. Kiefer was a good man.
It sounds as though the training you're getting with commandos was a lot more offensive in its
character. It was offensive. You had no use for commandos in defense. Mm. So at the end of number 5 troops' job on the continent, we were subject to have to defend ourselves in a very difficult position, and I can tell you that at that time, that thing we were no good at all. Mm. Yeah,
but I mean, presumably you knew about defensive.
Yeah, of course.
You've done it in the Norwegian.
Yeah.
And I'm presuming that when you were doing your mountain warfare, you were doing all the phases of war, offensive and defensive. When you were doing the mountain warfare training, did that have any distinct characteristics in terms of its?
No, you know that we did our mountain warfare in. I was only for a very short time up there in Scotland, but the main thing was, of course, what sort of communication or what sort of transport could we use in the Scottish mountains?
Yes.
And of course, the Scottish mountains isn't any mountains in the real task of what mountains is in for instance in Norway, where the unit should be able to fight, because you know the Scottish mountain is a very very slow, easy slopes. I can tell you, full of water most of the time. I told you that in Scotland it doesn't rain at all, but it drizzles 366 days a year.
Yes. Well, another thing that people who train in Scotland mention besides the drizzle is the midges.
Yes.
As a real hazard.
Yeah.
So you're in the commando, you trained for landing operations and for raiding in North Wales and elsewhere. And then you went to the Shetlands. When was that?
And then, of course, you know that we were reported, the unit reported ready for action 1st of October.
Yes.
And then, of course, it was a need to have us that. I can show you by that. In mid of December, the first group from number 10 commander was sent to Shetland. Mm. That was a group of 18 and one officer, who, together with number 12 commando, should do a special raid on Norway. That was on the west coast of Norway, in a place called Stord, where they were going to attack and destroy some gruvel, what you call that, where they take out different ground things from the ground, you know. pits.
Ah.
There was pits producing what was the special metal and so on. Mm. And they did this
mines.
Yeah. Yes. They attacked that, stored the mines there, and destroyed that, and got back. And that was the first week of January 1943. Mm. The attack went in, and we lost one man there. But the pits and the thing was destroyed for the rest of the war. And that was the first group. So then in January 1942, the second group was sent over, and they took part in a raid at Florø, so that's a town on the west coast of Norway, where they raided the harbor and sank all the shipping in there. And where during the moving on MTBs in the harbor, there is a small island in the harbor, and one of the MTBs went on dry under that island and had to be left there.
It ran ashore then.
And, sure, yeah. Mm. And so the third group under me was organized. And that is the strangest group that ever worked in England. Because in England you had a lot of famous Arctic personnel.
Yes, polar explorers.
Yeah. And the one who had those under command was Sir Peter Scott.
Yes.
And he had David Haig Thomas. Mm. David Haig Thomas and then Peter... what's the British big firm who making sewing thread for the sewing machines?
Singer?
Not Singer, no. Courtauld.
Courtauld, yes.
Andrew Courtauld.
Textile firm.
Yeah, yes. He was in that group.
Yes.
And sort of famous British explorers. Mm. And then they took 12 men from Norway, that's me, with me as a leader, and we had 12 Canadian Eskimos, with Captain Lizard. From Canada,
how did you get Canadian? How was it Canadian Eskimos turned up in England?
Yeah, I don't know what anyone
thought.
We were all, first of all, assembled in Shetland. Mm. And after being a week or two in Shetland, we were sent down to the west coast of Scotland in Loch Carron, that is close to Kyle and Loch Hals, where all the mine laying ship had their base. And the reason was that the Canadian came over with Canadian canoes.
Kayaks.
And the Eskimos, Canadians, were with Canadian kayaks. Mm. And then we had a Norwegian group who was Norwegian, what was called Norwegian kayaks. And we were training limpet work with those kayaks. And we planned also a raid on the Norwegian coast, where we should come up there and you know, the convoys had sort of hiding harbors all along the coast,
places, yes.
But they stopped, and then we should go and sink ships. Mm. And I tried to tell them all the time that if you come to Norwegian, to the coast of Norway, with an Indian canoe, they haven't seen anything like that at all. And even the civilian population, they think, what the hell is all this? Mm. and so that after a lot of discussion, we sent a small raid with two Norwegian soldiers from my group and two Canadians under leadership of a naval officer from New Zealand. And it was a completely flop.
What went wrong?
They didn't bring with them Indian canoes, but they went with dories and Eskimo kayaks. And the sea was too rough for them to operate on otherwise than close to the land with Eskimo kayaks. That they knew before them. But they tried to operate or start a base in the Sea of Song, that's on the west coast of Norway. Mm. And had only put up the camp and put up tents that were discovered by some people who thought that was something strange, so they reported it to the local police. Mm. The local police wouldn't report it to the Germans, but they went out to have a look at it before they did anything. And after discussing, they had this discussion, the personnel on the raid, with the Norwegian police.